Bob, let's go back and talk about your time at WKLO, maybe some specifics about the radio station. Okay. Now, what was it like to be on the radio in a showcase studio? I've never done that. That seems like that could be either a lot of fun or very distracting, or both.
It was distracting at times, but mostly it was a lot of fun. Here's another story. It's a Sunday afternoon, the summer of, I believe, 1976. I think I was doing middays at the time, like 9 to 2 during the week, and my weekend shift was 2 to 7 on Sunday afternoon. I'm sitting there one day, it's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and this car comes around the corner of 3rd and Muhammad Ali, and it's a Volkswagen, and there's two girls in it, and just for a second, I thought the one that was sitting shotgun in the car was naked, okay? Well, the car slows down. I think it might have even stopped. The woman raises up. She's not naked. She's got on a tube top, and she just pulls it right down. And I went, okay. And then they sped off. And Bo Brady was a very good artist. He's even really painted some things that are fantastic. My daughter has something that he made a long time ago, gave her mother and I. He used to draw cartoons, and we had a playlist thing we'd fill out every day, and he'd draw cartoons all over it. One day I walked in, and there's just a piece of 8.5 by 11 paper sitting there, and it's got this Volkswagen with two huge breaths coming out of it, and it's like looking to the back of my head, and there's these exclamation points coming out of my head. And that was funnier than what happened really on the street. And I told everybody about it, and I said, I'm the only one that saw it. I could be making it up, but honestly, that did happen. There was a lot of other strange things. Bill Bailey saw a guy expose himself in front of a bunch of girls one night. No, it wasn't Bill Bailey. It was Johnny Randolph. And Johnny, I think, or he or his newsman called the cops. And it was an old drunk, and the cops came and took him away. And there was one day when somebody was on the air, and they made a crack about a song. And the song was called Teddy Bear, and it was about an invalid boy who talked to truckers, and the guy came on after the song, and he kind of made it sound like he was weeping, and some guy came up to the studio window saying, I'm going to beat your you-know-what, and the jock on the air, I won't say who it was, they have to tell you, picked up the telephone and said, you see this? I'm calling the police. You're threatening me. And I'm standing right there in the studio going, okay, guys, let's control our anger here. And the guy finally got in his car and drove off. But he was a pretty big guy, and I thought, well, we may have a real problem here. But there was also a couple other people in the building. That was on a weekend. Most of the contact with people was positive. When I was working during the day there, a lot of business people would walk by. They'd always wave. I know when WKLO first went on the street with the Showcase Studio, it was very exciting. It was unusual. I don't know who first did it in the United States, but I think WKLO was one of the first. Wacky was still in the Kentucky Home Life building. I think mold was growing on 790 at that time. It was a whole new concept. I can remember being down there a few times. For instance, when Ken Douglas was on the air, and I don't know if this guy was ever mentioned in the WKLO jock lineup, Montgomery Hogg.
Oh, yeah, Montgomery Hogg.
Okay. In the, I think, 1968. I went down there one night, and he played the top 10 at 10 or something like that, and the number one song was the 2-minute and 43-second version of Inagata Da Vida. 2 minutes and 43 seconds out of 17 minutes and 5 seconds. Yeah, the Showcase Studio was extremely exciting. It wore out sometime in the early 80s. By that time, it was sort of cliché-ish. People would walk by and wouldn't even look in. It was just like a showcase window of a department store that had the same thing in it for 10 years, sort of. And then other people would, of course, had never seen it before. And it's kind of like, hey, somebody's interested. But in the beginning, it was very exciting.
It was show business. It was like going to watch a live TV taping, you know?
Right.
There was magic happening behind those windows.
And I think the last one, in Louisville that I can think of was still WKLO when they were KJ100 or DJX in sometime in the mid to late 80s. And they moved over on 4th Street, right down the street from where Wacky was. VEZ was still in there. So I was wrong about that. WVEZ was still in the Showcase studio, and I think DJX into the late 90s.
So VEZ was using the old Wacky control room?
Yeah. Actually, Wacky, which was WWKY, where I was a producer for about 7 months for the morning show, used the newsroom where Reed Yaden used to be when he was on the air with Bailey. And we sort of sat sideways to the window that looked into the old Wacky studio.
Let's talk about some of the people that you work with. You mentioned some names before. Tell us about Mike Rivers. He's no longer with us. What was he like?
Mike Rivers was extremely talented. He was a little aloof to me because that was my very early days in radio. You know, he wasn't negative or anything. He wasn't there all that long after I started working there, but I'll tell you, Mike was a tremendous production man. The jingle that goes, WKLO, the slow jingle of the 70s, Mike made that with, I believe, Carolyn Davidson, who at one time was sales or promotions for WKLO in the early 70s. He did jingles for clients of WKLO, and the thing I remember most about production at WKLO back then was when, I believe, Carl Truman Wigglesworth was there. They had the first radio station recording studio, specifically as a production and recording studio ever in Louisville, and they had a custom-made board, which incidentally we went on the air with on WCII in 1980. We used it for about 6 months, right before Bill Bailey came. The Duke of Louisville moved across the street. He could be bought. This is what I heard. George Francis was the general manager of WAKY. He told somebody he found out he was going to be fired, so he let Bill Bailey out of his contract. He told Bobby Hatfield, who had used to work at Wacky, who was then program director of the new KJ100 and oversaw the program directorship of WCII, which was 1080, used to be WKLO. And I was doing afternoon at the time, and I walked down the hall one day, and a guy named Kevin O'Neill came up to me and said, "Did you hear Bill Bailey's coming here?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "I heard Bailey was coming. Have you heard anything about it?" And I said, "No." I went into Bobby Hatfield and I said, "Hey, I just heard Bailey might be coming here." And I thought it was, you know, he'd say, "Sure, he's going to do overnights or something," you know, and laugh. And he goes, "Wait a minute, wait a minute." And he closes the door to his office. And I said, "What?" And he said, "Yeah, Bailey's coming here, but keep it quiet." And John, the whole time between that time and Bailey actually being in that building and me seeing him, I had a hard time believing it because Bill had been at Wacky kicking butt for 11 years. And he was walking down the hall of KJ100 and Country 11, WCII, one morning. And I went, "You gotta be kidding." And it was his last morning on Wacky. And when he finished his air shift, he walked over and I met him. You couldn't meet a nicer guy. He invited me into his house several times, had a derby party, which I think just ended yesterday. Bill Bailey is very professional. You could be walking down the hall and talk to him about something, and he'd walk in and flip on the mic and go, "Yeah, you know something? Those tulips of mine." And he'd take off with it, and he'd captivate you. There were people that were groomed professionals that loved to listen to him. He was a storyteller. I think Bill Bailey somehow could have been on national TV or radio if things had been, you know, a little bit different or whatever, but he really didn't have to be. In the 60s, 70s, and 80s, he had the attention of Louisville radio listeners. So, what, about a little over 20 years, he was great. So, people like Mike Rivers, Bill Bailey, Johnny Randolph, Gary Burbank, Dude Walker, Weird Beard, Coyote, Chuck Jackson, all those people at Wacky and WKLO, you know, if I died tonight, it was a pleasure working with all of them. And Ed Phillips, who also worked at Wacky, we started off with the pirate radio station at his place. Working with all those people was a highlight of my life. If I'd made five times the money I'd made, it wouldn't have been any more enjoyable. And I kind of revert back to some of my skills that I was taught by a lot of great people. Let's certainly not leave Lee Gray out. He was a great teacher. Lee Gray was very intelligent. He was a groomed professional. He could be walking down the hall and fall and break his leg and come up to the mic and sound like nothing would happen. He wasn't much different from Bailey. Bailey kind of had that New York City cab driver voice and everything that captivated people, but Lee Gray had one of those voices that always, well, he was more so with women. He could really get women listening. And I heard that from several women, you know, and he'd say things like, "Now, you be sure to take an umbrella today, honey, so all that sweetness won't get wet." And believe it or not, women of all kinds like stuff like that coming out of the radio. See, that's what we missed after, you know, the 90s in radio. Lee Gray was very good at production. He was a very good teacher. He had high energy. There were times when he got upset about things. Sometimes he went overboard, and he would later say, you know, "Look, I got a little bit too hot about that," and da-da-da-da-da. But all in all, he knew the formatics of radio. He was a good program director. His main skill was announcing. He knew how to paint the pictures and put them in your ear. He knew different delivery styles in production, in other words, commercials. And he taught me a lot. I got better by working under him and took that on with me from there. But I stole from everybody. Anything that sounded good, I grabbed it. And that's one of the good things about radio. And I think the more we work in this business, we get ideas from other people, then we start putting them together in our own ways. Some people do it earlier than others, but I have heard people that have been on the air before, and this goes back to WKLO, Jill Lawrence, who ended up doing middays on KJ100, started out on WKLO, and Jill, when you started out on WKLO, you stunk. I mean, she was sing-songy, she'd stutter and all this stuff. Within a year, she sounded like Diane Sawyer. I mean, she was just one of those people that developed from somebody that shouldn't have lasted 2 weeks into a polished professional. So, you know, Bailey, Burbank, Lee Gray, people like that, you know, big old funky brother Love, who was very high energy, very funny and everything. He could turn around and do a spot for a facial cream commercial, and you wouldn't even know it was him unless you really listened closely. Those kind of things impressed me. And those kind of people came and went in the Louisville market over all those years from the 50s into the 80s. And when I listened to the air check on the websites, I just go, wow, what talent we had here. And another name that people recognize, other than Bailey and Johnny Randolph, is Gary Burbank. And he was in the market two times, Wacky and WHAS. And you definitely knew when he was on the air. But when he's just talking to you, he doesn't really sound all that much like he does on the air. He's got just a pretty laid-back voice and everything, unless he gets excited. Don't get him excited. Get him too excited, you got to throw water on him. He was very high energy. And all these people I've just mentioned, they were just very intelligent and skilled individuals, and all in their own ways. Bo Brady, Jackson Smith, Rusty Rogers, Ron Lake, Dan Mason, all those people. You know, and a lot of the other ones, you know, I didn't mention. Bill Crisp, he definitely doesn't get enough credit. All those people just had such great qualities. I know at one time I had, you know, a big ego about it, and then one day it just hit me. Who in the hell are you, you know, as compared to anybody else? You know, you're just somebody on the radio. But it was really exciting to listen to my friends, too.
What about Gary Major? He was at WKLO a good long time through most of the 70s.
Yeah, and Gary did a little bit of everything. You know, he was on in the darkness. You know, he was on in the daytime. He was music director and, like, assistant program director with Robin Walker. I think Gary's the one that came up with the idea of 1080 KLO in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
Early to mid-70s, right after Hennis. And it gave dial position and concentrated on KLO. Sometimes stations do have to change part of their strategy. Mitch Michael mentioned that he used radio WKLO because he said, do people really know whether WKLO is radio or television? That's ingenious.
Mm-hmm.
So Gary had a lot of ideas. Robin kind of gave him the duty and authority for the playlist and the oldie categories, which gives a jock a certain amount of leeway, but you play this category after this category, and then there's those philosophies like don't play too many fast songs, don't play too many slow songs, don't back up Henry Mancini with Rock and Roll by Led Zeppelin.
And these are the days before computers scheduled the music like they do now.
Right. You actually had to think. There are certain formatics that you almost can't mess up. One of them is tight playlist, and actually jocks don't like that too much. But the whole idea is don't play what you like. Think about the people out there and think about entertaining them. I think at one time Lee Gray said, think about several different people who might be listening to you and not just the hot babe in her bed. Think about the guy driving a truck. Think about the mother fixing a meal. Think about somebody out barbecuing. Think about somebody who's had a bad day. And things like that would get my attention. And things like, it's going to be sunny today, but we're going to get some rain tomorrow to help the green grass grow. A lot of times we don't like rain after we've had a sunny day. But the rain makes the green grass grow. Wow, what an idea.
Yeah.
And I heard that in Pittsburgh one time and used it, and somebody commented on that later and said, boy, it didn't make the rain sound so bad after all. And when other people would do that on the air, I'd go, man, and I used to ride along at times, and if there was anything to write on, sometimes I'd pull over and I'd copy it down.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, fellow radio brothers and sisters.
There's nothing new in radio. It's all recycled.
Right. I think there were five guys that came up with everything, and then the rest of us just copied it.
Exactly. What about Rusty Rogers? He's no longer with us. He died here just a few years ago, and tell me about him.
Rusty was a scream. I worked before and after Rusty at WKLO at different times. His primary time slot was 6 to 10 in the evening, and Rusty was always really fun to work with. He did almost cause a heart attack one night. He was having a party at his house, and I'm sitting in this room, and we're just having the normal conversation. I think Bo was there and Jackson Smith, and Rusty walks in the room with a rifle and goes, hey, Bob, and I looked up, and he fired it.
Wow.
And it had a blank in it. And I didn't want to hit him over the head with a rifle, but I said, he knew how much it scared me, and I said, Rusty, think of something else the next time. Well, the next time didn't happen with me. It was not long after that. I'm listening to Bo one day. I'm just sitting at home listening to the radio, and I hear, it's 4:22, and this is Bob Rowdy. And I went, what was that all about? Rusty threw a pie in his face.
Oh, man.
So I went down to the studio about a week later with a lemon meringue pie while he was on the air. And at that time, I was working after Rusty in the evening. And he knew it was coming. He turned on the mic, and he's looking up at me. And you used to be able to walk behind the board at WKLO when it was on Ali. And I guess I just hadn't practiced enough. I brought the pie up from behind the board, and I think it got him on the arm or something, but I wanted to put it right in his face. So I missed. There wasn't another pie, but when I went on the air, he snuck in there while I was talking and poured a Coca-Cola on my head.
Oh, man.
He also had somebody, and if I can find this picture, I'll send it to you to put it on the website. He had somebody take a picture of it while it was happening And in the picture, the Coke is coming out of the bottle or the can, whatever it is. It hasn't hit my head yet, but you can see the Coke. And I'm just standing there like, it's a beautiful day, and this is WKLO, and I'm feeling good, and whatever I'm saying. I just look like I don't have a care in the world, not knowing that 0.5 seconds later, that Coke is going to hit me smack dab on the head. It went down my face, down my shirt, etc. It was fun working with Rusty. He came in on the 4th of July one day while I was on the air. It was the afternoon. I think it was the bicentennial, 1976. He walked in with sparklers and his face painted red, white, and blue. He had on an American flag T-shirt and a pair of American flag boxer shorts. And we sung Yankee Doodle Dandy on the air. It was a blast working with him. So that's what made radio really fun. I had my moments where, you know, just like anybody, I'm sure it happened with Walter Cronkite and all those people at one time or another, where I get frustrated about things. But looking back on it, it was fun. It was very high energy. I don't know anybody that said, if I hadn't worked at WKLO, I wouldn't be worth millions today. I've never heard anybody say that, but we all really enjoyed it.
All right, real quickly, let's talk about Bob Klein post WKLO. I know you said you worked at KJ100 and WCII and some other stations. So from the time that you left KLO the last time, where did you go and what are you doing today?
After KLO, I went to WLAC in Nashville for approximately a year, came back, went to WSAC in Fort Knox, which I consider to be the best small market radio station in the United States. They were a great radio station, AM and FM, top 40, album-oriented rock. I went to WSAC the summer of 78, but the manager wanted me to move down close to the radio station. I couldn't do it. I got a job with WTMT, which was 620 AM. I did mornings there for about 3 or 4 months, went to what is now WRKA, did mornings and started out just doing mornings, moved into music director, program director got fired. I took over as program director. Tad Murray, who had been Bo Brady, got to use his real name again, and he eventually became general manager and also did afternoons for a while. Then it became WRKA. I left radio for a few months. Then I went to KJ100. I was there for a couple of years, went to Wave Radio, WQMF for 3 years, and got out of radio.
Why'd you get out?
Actually, it was one of those decisions where I thought, you know, I think it's run its course in my life. And I like WQMF. It was more laid back, but it was more the cool DJ. I used the name Jay Stone there. In the summer of 88, I talked to the program director, and just in the conversation, I said, it's a great radio station, but I think I need to get out of radio. And I left, eventually got into sales. I worked in sales for a few years, and eventually went back to school, and today I'm a therapist, Tenbrook Hospital in Eastern Louisville. And I've been doing this for about 13 years, and I love it. And I still use some of my old radio stuff when I do group with people. So still never a dull moment. And I love music. I've got it going almost all the time.